Welcome to another episode of Marcus Whitney Live. I'm thrilled. My guest today is my friend Scott Hamilton. Scott is the most recognized male figure skating star in the world, and he's figure skating's voice of authority in the United States. Scott's won 70 titles, awards, and honors, including an Emmy Award nomination, induction into the United States Olympic Hall of Fame, and he's a privileged member of the World Figure Skating Hall of Fame. After losing his mother to cancer, then becoming a survivor himself, Scott turned activist and launched the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation. It's a cancer alliance for research, education, and survivorship. Scott and I talk about the effect that COVID-19 is having on the Olympic world and on the healthcare world from a patient and a provider perspective. I think you're going to find his insights and perspective both enlightening and also inspiring. With that, enjoy the episode.
This is Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe.
Like, you gotta do the work. You gotta show up and just do the work.
All right. Another episode of Marcus Whitney Live, and I'm here with my friend, Scott Hamilton. Scott, how are you?
I'm great. And it's always, you know, it's just being your friend. That's like, bing, bonus.
Dude, I feel the same. I feel the same way.
I know. Don't see you enough. And you're like easily one of my favorite people on the planet Earth. So
well,
we got to fix that. Once this whole thing is behind us, yeah.
We got to do dinner and bring families together and all of that really important stuff, right? And for anyone who might be wondering, and I surprised Scott with this, but that's Scott's permanent place in my man cave, as he put it, right there.
So. The back of my bald head.
Exactly. Yes. If you're listening, you're missing it. I've got a poster from the Health Brother Festival.
Easily.
So
but you're stuck with this side this time.
Yeah, I love this side. So Scott, I mean, there are a million things we could talk about. You're such a fascinating and just important human being in all times, and certainly in this time. I have two topics I want to talk to you about. One is this is a year for the Olympics. We're supposed to have the Summer Olympics in Japan, mm-hmm. and they are going to be postponed. And yes. Many, many things are being postponed, right? You know, postponed or canceled. Yeah. You know, the Olympics only, you know, the Summer Olympics only come around every 4 years. And so the people who are training for these Olympics, you know, some of them, because of the age range, they may only get one Olympics to compete in. And, you know, 1 year's time could make a massive, massive difference. I would just love to sort of hear, as someone who is a staple in the Olympic community, and always on our TV screens whenever the Winter Olympics come around, you know, what can you tell us about the Olympic community and how the decision to postpone is affecting everybody?
Well, you know, you got to look at it. There's a lot of ways of looking at it. You know, if for me personally, had my Olympics been postponed a year, I probably wouldn't have won. There are skaters that are kind of doing this. So that's always a concern for the athletes is timing. It's like you've spent the last 4 years kind of, you know, building up your, you know, your skill sets to peak at a certain time. And you don't know, you know, maybe this was the year and then now we have to push it off a year. You know, honestly, a postponement's always better than a cancellation. And when you look at the billions and billions of dollars a host city spends on preparing for an Olympic Games, it, you know, a cancellation, no bueno, you know, it's not good at all. So the best thing you can do, and again, when was the last time this happened? Never, 1918. But, you know, but it's like that. It's like, how do we prepare for something like this? I mean, there's really no way to kind of predict, prepare, or put, you know, things in place for a virus like this that's so contagious that no one knows what to do with it, right? So you can't be putting millions of people together in one place, you know, in a gigantic summer games are spread out all over the place. And there's so many venues and there's so much and it's so big and there's no way, you know, especially in Japan, we invite all that in during this time and then expect people to walk away whole. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So a year postponement to me was the smartest, best thing you could do, not only for the Olympic movement and the health of the Olympic movement, but also, you know, for the health of the fans, the people that are there watching in any capacity, whether they be a volunteer, member of the media, athletes, trainers, coaches, whatever, to kind of put this down as like, well, no, this is our time. And then, you know, you've created a whole another pandemic. It's really best to kind of just say, okay, we're going to, you know, choose our battle wisely. The best thing we can do is postpone exactly a year. It keeps the athletes' training schedules, you know, on schedule as far as when they have their events, what time of year, what they do, when they do what they do, and when they, you know, how they do it. It's the best of a horrible situation. So, you know, the U.S. Olympic Committee reached out to me and you shoot a short video, you know, just in either support or protest or whatever it is. And it's like, no, I mean, you can't push back on this. You just can't. You've got to go with the flow and you've got to make decisions based on what's in the best interest of all parties. And with the nature of this bug, I mean, we don't know. We don't know if it mutates. We don't know what, you know, we don't know enough about it yet to be able to say, okay, absolutely by August, September, we're going to be fine. We don't know that, you know, and so it's, you know, it's best just to say, okay, we'll figure this out over a year. That's a pretty good bet. So let's just postpone it. And I think they did the wise choice. And it really honors the commitment made by Tokyo to host the games. So all good, everybody. I think ultimately, except for maybe that athlete that was going to hang on one more year, and now they got to hang on another year. Again, if it would have been me, I wouldn't have won the Olympics the next year, more than likely. But best thing would be to postpone.
Yeah, it does seem like this is just a moment in time where so many people will either have a dream deferred or not realized because of this event, and there will just be so many of us that it will just be a collective sacrifice that has been made. But I would agree. My son is currently in Japan, and you know, so just from tracking him, I knew that Japan was taking this very seriously very early, and you know, had sort of shut down all things public pretty early, and so they hadn't made the announcement about the Olympics right at the beginning of the country shutdown, but it was pretty clear that they were ultimately being very, very cautious and very, very focused on public health. And so it did seem like ultimately they were measuring how they were going to make a postponement eventually, because obviously, you know, the kind of investment, as you talked about, that bid doesn't happen just in 4 years. You know, you work for a very, very long time to be able to make that bid, and the amount of money that's spent, it just doesn't seem fair at all. As unfair as it would be for the athletes, it seems completely unfair for the city and the country to lose that opportunity.
Exactly. And you know, money can return, right? Money comes back, lives don't. When a life is lost, it's lost, it's gone, it's over. So, you know, to make all your decisions based on cash or finances, you know, it's always better to think, okay, I've got to short myself first. I've got to be, you know, why do they tell us to put the mask on our face before that of children? If we're no good, they're no good, right? So, you know, we've got to look after our health, our lives, our, you know, everything we possibly can. And the money, you know, yeah, there's going to be money lost. And I know a lot of people are financially hurting right now. But the hope is that you can live to fight another day.
Yes.
And we can get that money back, or we can, you know, work our way out of the situation. But, you know, to put ourselves at risk, you know, doesn't make any sense. Let's just caution rules.
Yeah.
In a situation like this.
Yeah. So Scott, you and I met because, not because of the Olympics and not because of soccer, but we met because of healthcare. Obviously this is a healthcare issue. It's a public health issue, but it is certainly a healthcare issue. The healthcare system that we know is full of some of the most incredible people in the world working in it was already stressed, right? It was already stressed. The frontline workers that we're all now coming to call heroes were already in a very, very precarious situation just because of incentive models and economics and things of that nature. And this virus came along and really, you know, as anything like this would, it exposes vulnerabilities. And a lot of vulnerabilities have been exposed. If you would just share a little bit about why healthcare has become so important to you, and then I'd love to hear how this has how this has impacted the work that you have been doing, and maybe has evolved it a little bit, maybe in the short term, but maybe forever.
Yeah, it's a tough time. I, as being a kind of a professional patient, you know, I call it my unique hobby of collecting life-threatening illnesses. You know, I get it a little bit, you know, but so much, if you think about, and you know, you're intimately involved in healthcare issues and all that. It's always economic models. It's always, you know, they always put everything on insurance. Whenever there's any legislation, it's always, you know, insurance or it's this. It's always kind of about how do we pay for it? But, you know, the people that get lost in all of that are doctors, nurses, and patients. You know, the people that are on the front lines that are really just in there getting the work. They went to school for a very long time and a very expensive education to be able to save your life, right? So those are the people, I think, in many respects, have been kind of like, you know, you sit over here. We're going to, you know, we'll get to you in a minute, but we're really more worried about this right now. And it's like, we've got to give doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals every opportunity we can to give them the right environment to work in, right? And the right, give the patients the right information that where they can make the best decisions for their own health and longevity. And, you know, there's so much has been, you know, just about, you know, paying for it. And, you know, it's kind of this upward spiral. And again, you know more about that than I'll, you know, you've forgotten more than I'll ever know. But what I see in this is that the focus now, because they're putting themselves at risk, it's a combat situation, is now these healthcare workers that, you know, we kind of talk about, you know, in a way, they're now in the front lines. They're in there, they're fighting every single day and at exhaustion and with little supplies. They're running out of this. They don't need, they're making life and death decisions based on what they have. And we're looking at them probably different than we've ever looked at them before because of the enormity of the commitment and, you know, the integrity it takes to kind of say, I'm going to go to work today. And I don't know if I'm going to be sick when I leave. I don't know if I'm going to die. I don't know, but I have to, I've taken this oath, you know, this personal and this spiritual oath that I am going to help people. And the focus is on them right now. And as it always should have been from the very beginning, but you know, healthcare, it's a very complex, very expensive, very evolving industry all the time. But I think right now we're seeing it at its finest hour, where people are putting themselves out there in a very brave, very selfless, very desperate situation. And I applaud them. You know, I've had a lot of experience with a lot of doctors, a lot of nurses. They're all my heroes because they've saved my life on multiple occasions. But right now, I think the general public is seeing, you know, just these videos that are going out on social media. It's like, it's hard work and it's hour upon hour upon shift upon shift upon, you know, we need ventilators. We need PPE. And there's going to be a lot of, you know, and it's just the nature of the world. There's going to be a lot of Monday morning quarterbacks out there going, well, we should have.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, well, no, you're doing the best you can under.
That's right.
If you would have told me months ago, oh, by the way, in 6 months, you know, everything you've ever saved, everything you've ever invested is going to shrink remarkably. Okay, well, wait a minute. What do we? And now you're going to have to hold yourself up in your house and not leave because of my health history. I can't get this. What? You know, it's like, what in the world? The world changed in relatively like weeks. The whole world changed. And everything about this thing is, to me, it's fundamentally evil. It's undermining people's abilities to be safe in their own homes, to interact with other people, to make a living, to everything. Everything has been shaken to its core. And, you know, all I can do is pour into my family and pour into my faith. That's all I can do. And if I can lend a voice or, you know, cheer on people that are doing the work, I'll do that. If there's any good I can do in all of this, I really want to do it. But, you know, with all the work that I do in cancer and all that, and that's on like hold, it's just like blinking. It's like, wait a minute. For everybody that dies of COVID-19, and people are dying of cancer at the exact time. Oh, but they have to wait. And the urgency is now to stop this thing, and it's the right choice, stop it. But there are still people that are suffering from the, you know, historically over the last, I don't know how many years, the number one cause of death. 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women. And we can't forget those. You know, we can't forget those people that are fighting for their lives with, you know, an enemy that their body decided to do on its own. You know, it's not like you can sneeze on somebody and give them cancer. You can sneeze on somebody and give them COVID-19. You know, so we got to pick our battles, and it's hard, but hopefully, you know, we can all survive this in a way that, not just physically and health-wise, but financially and emotionally and mentally.
You know, yeah, I mean, that to me feels it is hard. It is hard. I am you know, I feel like I'm way more fortunate than many, and I am optimistic and positive, and I'm doing the right things to try to reinforce a healthy perspective, and just, you know, all the things you would do: exercising, eating well, getting good sleep. You know, I'm doing all these things, staying productive, staying creative. You know, connecting with people the best I can. You know, talking to you, this is great. You know? and at the same time, there are these moments where the gravity of everything that's happening is very heavy. You know, it is very heavy. And I just think, wow, you know, if I have these moments where it is heavy and I am so fortunate and able to be resilient because I'm fortunate and blessed, gosh, man, we had 17 million people file for unemployment in the last 3 weeks. You know, I mean, there is a level of uncertainty out there that people have. Yeah. You know, when we talk about the economy, you know, we're really just talking about people's certainty, you know, and there's very little right now.
Yeah.
You know, there's very, very little.
Where do we hang hope?
Right.
And for me, you know, it's that book right there has gotten me through everything. I wake up every morning, and Steve Berger, my pastor at Grace Chapel, does a devotion every morning, and I'm pouring into the Word, and I'm trying to get hope, and I it's all so fresh for me because I just got back from Israel right before they shut the country down. Never been there before. It was like, you know, all of that is like, it's like timing, you know, and
yeah,
you know, and it's so powerful, and it's so hopeful. And it's such a participation sport, faith, you know, it's like,
it is, you got to put into it. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like, what else can I do? I can't go to work. I mean, I, I can't even go to the grocery store. My wife's doing all of that because, you know, I had massive amounts of chemo. I'm on total hormone replacement right now, thanks to that little brain tumor. I've got some issues that I've got to really be cautious about, like a lot of people out there, the elderly. But, you know, I feel so much empathy for anyone that's out there that's just wondering how they're even going to pay for food because they can't go to work,
or right,
how am I going to, you know, like if we could just find a way to push pause and just allow this thing to run its course. But no, there has to be commerce. Everybody, I want my rent. I want my this. I want my, and it's like, but there's nothing coming in.
Right, like, right.
You get blood out of a stone. It's like, sorry.
Yeah.
Best that I can, but the best that I can, I'm not allowed to do right now. So
yes,
I mean, we could just push pause. Let's just, nothing like this has ever happened. You know, where we are in our history, there's nothing like this has ever happened. So let's just all work together and find a way to just push pause. And you know, you've got these multi-trillion dollar, packages that are going out there for relief, but oh my, is any of that money going to get in the hands of anyone? You know, that's, I'm not being pessimistic.
No, look, I just did a talk with my friend who is an SVP at Pinnacle Financial Partners. And, you know, like we talked through the difficulty, my bank too. Right. And we talked about the difficulty of these things. And, you know, in a lot of cases, it's not even the bank. It's like, you know, the government was not built to handle 17 million unemployment requests in 3 weeks. You know, it wasn't built to handle the millions of applications that are coming in for this SBA loan program. You know, so even when you pass the law because you say this is what's needed, okay, that's great, but your systems can't handle it. Yeah. You know, it can't handle it. And so there is this need for a second, because money is so weird right now, right?
Yeah.
To figure out a way to take care of each other without money as the ultimate intermediary at the moment, right? As the ultimate ledger and the ultimate check and balance, right? Like we'll get back to that, but
yeah,
for a window of time, we gotta find a way to exchange value and take care of each other that doesn't require, here's a dollar for this, right?
Yeah, yeah. And in the end, it goes back to that whole George Bailey thing when there was the run on the bank, you know? And
yeah.
It's a wonderful life. He goes, tell me what you need. We're gonna get through this. What do you need? What do you need right now? Let me give you what you need and let's get through this together. And it's like, is there any way in this gigantic country with all this commerce and all this economy and all this stuff, there's probably no way to do that. But at the same time, it's like, we've got to do something.
We got to do something.
And so, you know, throwing a lot of money at printing a lot of money. Yeah, we're going to inflation, whatever. Yeah, we got all that to deal with. But oh, if we could just find a way to just feed people, house people, you know, and all the things that we desperately need, right? You know, and we've got a huge homeless problem. We've got all these, you know, hunger, you know, it's been a problem in our country for a very long time. And all these things are now exposed in a way where even people that have the means aren't able to get the food that they really want. And it's like, wow, this is real. I mean, this is our whole, everything has been shaken down to its core, down to its ground zero. And we've got to find a way to power through this. And hopefully the healthcare world will find a treatment or a preventative, you know, vaccine or whatever for this illness, or at least, you know, tell us who's most at risk. And, you know, and give them the tools they need to avoid it. You know, I think that what we're doing right now is stay at home. Don't breathe on anybody. You know, only breathe in. Don't breathe out.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. You know, only breathe out. Yeah, right. You know, depending on where you are, right? So it's bizarre and it's frightening and it's alarming. But I do think that, you know, I'm the eternal optimist. I have to be. When you're, you know, a 5'3" bald former figure skater, you know, you've got to find a way for optimism, right? You know, so I do believe that, you know, when we come through this, I honestly think people are going to be affected in a really profound way, where they're going to appreciate relationships more, physical one-on-one relationships. They're going to have enough of all the virtual stuff, but it's going to be, man, we got it. We just got to get together, man. We just got to do something. I want to go to a movie again. I just want to go to a restaurant and just be, and just, I want to go to a park.
Yes. All these things we took for granted.
Right. And we're never going to take those for granted again. Well, until
not the generation that's experiencing this right now. Right. I mean, even our kids who are, and I would love to end on this note, because before we started recording, we were sharing stories about, all, you know, in the midst of this very devastating, terrible thing that's happening to all of us, the entire world, no one is exempt. There are blessings, and there are these amazing little things that are happening in our homes. And you know, and our kids, you know, my son, who's catty-cornered for me right now, just turned 19 years old. He's a freshman in college, but he and I and you are all part of the same generation now. We're all part of this generation that has had this experience, you know? And even though there's decades of years between us, he knows what it's like to only be able to see his girlfriend through a pane of glass and, you know, on video now. And he won't forget this.
No, of course not. My neighbor, his daughter turned 16, and I wanted to see this, and all our friends decorated their cars, and they all drove down through, and you know, there's a big, you know, line of cars that all came in together and honking, you know, and you know, splashing their lights and celebrating her birthday. And she's sitting on her front porch, and it's car after car after car. And I shot it for a while, then I go, oh, I need a better angle, the light's bad. So I ran up to the top of the hill and I took more video of this thing. And I was just so moved that it was such an expression of love. And we do that no matter what. We find ways to love the other person, even if we can't touch them, even if we can't, you know, we shouldn't be in their space, right? So, you know, for us, we've cooked dinner every night, and we've sat around the table every night, and we've blessed the food, and we've had conversation, and we, you know, have these little traditions that we're building in this that we never would have made time to do before. And our family's never been closer. We've never been this engaged in each other's lives. And it's been really healthy for us as a family just to be in each other's space all the time. And, you know, I'll never forget it. A gentleman that I knew in Cleveland, he was a very wealthy man, but he started with nothing. Very, like, he didn't even speak English when he was a kid. They escaped from Europe and came over. And he said, you know, I grew up sharing a room with my brother and my mother and father. They lived in a one-room house. And he said, I'll never look back on those times as bad times. They were beautiful times. And if we had an issue, man, we dealt with it. He goes, I'd like to fund a study that tracks the divorce rate versus the square footage in a home. Because he said, when we had an issue, man, we had to work it out.
Yeah.
That was just the way it was, right?
I love it.
So we're in this now, and we're in it to win it. And we're going to figure this coronavirus thing out. And you know, and we're going to come out of this closer, and we're going to have that as a shared experience. And we're going to be compassionate, and we're going to be supportive, and we're going to love on each other, and we're going to appreciate things probably more than we ever did before. And we'll heal financially over time. It's just the way it works. And, you know, we'll work hard, and we'll shore each other up, and we're going to live a little differently, prepare a little differently for what's next, you know, and hopefully better for the experience.
Amen. Amen. Well, amen. Scott, thank you so much. I'm glad you're well.
Thanks,
I'm glad you're okay.
I am so honored to be a part of your world in this, in my, my head right
dude.
There.
Come on.
Right. My head. I'm looking
look,
at
I walk in this
head.
Room and I see you out there facing those lights and I know everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Thank you again so much. And yes, look, when this is over, let's get together. I can't wait to give you a big old hug, man. I can't wait.
You're the best. You're the best of the best. You inspire me. Like very few people I've ever known. So God bless you.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe.